Abkhazia is located in the northwestern corner of the Republic of Georgia and has an area of approximately 8,400 square kilometers. That, in turn, is approximately 12% of Georgia's total territory. The northern border of Abkhazia is contiguous with the border of the Russian Federation, and western coast of Abkhazia is the coast on the Black Sea. It's a subtropical climate. Abkhazia has an extremely fertile agricultural sector, and both during the Soviet times and certainly in the more modern times, Abkhazia has been regarded as a very popular vacationing spot, sort of the Riviera for much of the Soviet elite. As long back as historians and others have cared to troll, the Abkhaz have had a separate identity from the Georgians. The precise origins of the Abkhaz in ancient history, so to say, are clouded in obscurity. The Abkhaz speak a North Caucasian language that is completely distinct from the Georgian language, and the Georgians do not dispute that the Abkhaz constitute a fundamentally different group. For that matter, the Abkhaz don't dispute either that the Georgians are a completely different group. The Georgians also recognize that the Abkhaz have been present in the region as far back as the Georgians. This is important because it essentially means that there is not debate or a dispute about who was there first, as there is in some other contested areas in the world. In the 19th century, both Abkhazia and Georgia were incorporated into the Russian Empire, which was rapidly and quite voraciously expanding into the Caucasus. This expansion exacted a very heavy toll on the Abkhaz, particularly because of massacres of the Abkhaz by Russian imperial troops in the 1860s. In the years and decades after the Russian Empire's absorption of Abkhazia, a very large proportion of the Abkhaz moved to the Ottoman Empire. As a result of this and some later events, more Abkhaz came to live outside of Abkhazia than inside it. This can also be said to be the beginning of a process in which the Abkhaz end up becoming a minority in what is Abkhazia. In the chaos that ensued during the collapse of the Russian Empire in the later stages of World War I, Georgia was able to proclaim its independence from Russia. Georgia had been part of the Russian Empire since the early 19th century. Georgia was ruled during this period by the Mensheviks, who were political rivals of the Bolshevik forces that assumed control of Russia. The Abkhaz, for their part, had a very negative collective memory of rule by Georgians in the brief interlude of the independence of Menshevik Georgia during the period from 1918 to 1921. Generally speaking, there has been a tendency on the Abkhaz side to perceive the Georgians as consistently taking advantage of the decline of the Abkhaz nation that I referred to a moment ago. That is to say that as the Abkhaz have, for various political and other reasons, declined demographically, Georgians and, to a lesser extent, other people such as the Armenians have stepped into the void, and this has again contributed to this trend that the Georgians and others have constituted an increasing proportion of the population of Abkhazia, and the Abkhaz have, as mentioned, become increasingly the minority in what they perceive to be their homeland. From 1922 to 1931, that is after the Bolsheviks forcibly conquered Menshevik Georgia and incorporated into the then very young Soviet Union, Abkhazia existed as a republic within the Soviet Union. In 1931, Stalin, who is a Georgian, and that's a fact I'll come back to in a second, a fact that the Abkhaz do not want to forget and cannot forget, Stalin in 1931 fused Abkhazia with the Transcaucasian Soviet Federative Socialist Republic. This Transcaucasian Soviet Federative Socialist Republic included Georgia as well. But then this is important. As I mentioned, Abkhazia had for a number of years from 1922 until 1931 existed as a separate republic within the Soviet Union. Like many other nationalities in the Soviet Union, the Abkhaz suffered greatly during the Stalinist era from repression and deportations. From 1936 to 1991, Abkhazia had the status of an autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic within the Soviet Socialist Republic of Georgia. A Soviet Socialist Republic, or SSR, is the highest category of territorial jurisdiction within the Soviet Union, and the ASSR, or Autonomous Soviet Socialist Republic, is the next step down. For all intents and purposes, though, one can say that for most of the Soviet period, the ASSRs had very limited autonomy within the SSRs in which they were located. As in other parts of the Soviet Union, Soviet repression and nationalities policy exacerbated interethnic relations in the Georgian SSR. Many scholars speak quite correctly of a general policy, especially during the Stalinist period, of divide and conquer from the central authorities in Moscow. That is to say, a Stalinist Soviet nationalities policy, to a large extent, consisted of playing groups against each other. These are groups whose identities were to some extent fostered and built up through language and education and other policies in the Soviet Union, particularly in the 1920s. We can, for example, speak of the Azeris and the Armenians, or in this case, the Abkhaz and the Georgians, who had historical and other reasons to have a rivalry or even a strong antagonistic relationship. What the Soviet central authorities did, again, especially during the Stalinist period, was to play these groups off against each other, and this, again, greatly exacerbated interethnic relations in the longer run. Moving ahead to the last period of the Soviet Union, one can say that most scholars generally regard Georgian national identity as having remained quite strong throughout the Soviet period. That is to say, one can speak of a strong Georgian national identity as a constant factor in Soviet history. During the last two decades, though, the late 70s would be an appropriate starting point, Georgian national identity became increasingly assertive. For example, in late 1970s, cautious attempts to introduce more rights for minorities in Georgia were angrily rebuffed by popular protests by the majority ethnic population, and this caused essentially the Soviet era leadership to withdraw or to backtrack on these increased rights for minorities. This, of course, was a quite worrying development for the minorities in Georgia, and presaged the tensions that would become even greater in the late 1980s as the Soviet Union started to disintegrate. In the Soviet context, the changes in the waning days of the Soviet Union meant that the Georgian Soviet Socialist Republic projected itself more robustly politically. Within the Georgian Soviet Socialist Republic, the growing sense of strong national identity caused tensions to fray with the Abkhaz. A particular watershed in the late history of Georgia was the adoption in 1988 of a state program for the Georgian language. This was perceived by the Abkhaz minority to be an attempt to reduce the status of the Abkhaz language and establish the hegemony of the Georgian language. For their part, the consensus among Georgians was that the Abkhaz, a numerical minority even in Abkhazia, as I mentioned earlier, already enjoyed more minority rights than the situation warranted. As one scholar, Shireen Hunter, has memorably observed, in sum, by the time of perestroika and glasnost, this is a quote, in sum, by the time of perestroika and glasnost, the Georgians and the Abkhaz had developed a mentality of mutual victimization, end quote. This is an extremely accurate and shrewd observation, and unfortunately reminds one of many other contested areas elsewhere in Europe and the world. That is to say, when you have this mentality of mutual victimization, moves by either group to assert its minority or majority rights will be perceived by the other group not as a legitimate manifestation of national rights and national destiny, but rather as an aggressive, threatening move directed at denigrating or even eliminating the rights to which the minority group is entitled. So these two opposing points of view slowly set in motion a perilous spiral in the late 1980s. The more the Georgian minority asserted itself and prepared the ground for an independent Georgia, the more this disquieted the Abkhaz minority. The Abkhaz formed an Abkhazian popular forum, which, among other activities, directed appeals for assistance to Moscow. This attempt to involve Moscow in the situation in Abkhazia greatly angered Georgians, who saw it as an open invitation for external interference in internal Georgian affairs. It can be stated that there is a consensus among scholars that such interference did in fact occur and increase beginning in 1988, that is to say, first Soviet interference aimed at keeping the Soviet Union together, and after 1991, Russian interference aimed at restricting the independence and autonomy of the newly independent Georgia, but there is disagreement about the motives for it. A paramount factor in the evolution of the situation in Georgia in the late 1980s and the early 1990s was the rise to power of former dissident Ziad Gamsakhurdia. Another key figure during this period was Gamsakhurdia's opponent, the erstwhile party secretary of Soviet Georgia, Eduard Shevardnadze, who's quite well known in the West as the foreign minister of the Soviet Union from 1985 to 1990. From the Western perspective, Shevardnadze played a quite productive role in shepherding the transition of Eastern Europe to democracy, of shepherding the Soviet Union to democracy, and of course also making the reunification of Germany possible. Safe to say that Shevardnadze's legacy is perceived quite differently in Russia and indeed in Georgia as well. Now, to go back to Gamsakhurdia, he had a strong and quite impressive record as a dissident who worked tirelessly as a human rights activist in the 1960s and 1970s, paid a very high price for it, imprisonment, censorship, etc., and co-founded the Georgian Helsinki Union in 1976. However, he was to bestow a very negative legacy on the nascent Georgian state. Elected as president of Georgia in April 1991, he ruled erratically and autocratically. His movement had a tendency to proclaim that they and he desired, quote, Georgia for Georgians, end quote. This phrase wreaked enormous havoc upon inter-ethnic relations in Georgia. It's so infamous, this phrase, that the current Russian president in 2008, Dmitry Medvedev, cited this phrase in his address or his resolution recognizing Abkhazia and South Ossetia as independent states. That is the presidential decree of August 26, 2008, to which I refer. Gamsakhurdia's son has actually claimed that his father never used this phrase, but as so often in situations of territorial dispute and ethnic conflict, the attribution of the phrase stuck. The important thing here is that to minorities in Georgia, and in this case to the Abkhaz minority, they certainly believed that and certainly perceived that what Gamsakhurdia, who had a tremendous popular support and won a landslide election in April 1991, the Abkhaz certainly perceived that Gamsakhurdia and his allies, his political proponents and allies, desired Georgia for the Georgians, that is to say, a state in which Georgia or Georgians would have a predominant and hegemonic role and in which the minorities, again including the Abkhaz, would enjoy second-class citizenship at best and more likely endure very poor treatment at the hands of Georgian policy. What does this mean practically? Well, it means that the Abkhaz minority and other minorities in Georgia feared that there would be increasing restrictions imposed upon the use of their language, both in the public and private spheres. There would be increasing restrictions or lack of funding for Abkhaz and other minorities, educational institutions, cultural institutions, etc., etc. Although some scholars have argued that Gamsakhurdia has been unfairly blamed for all of the maladies of democratic Georgia in the 1990s, there can be little doubt that he played a deleterious role in terms of relations with Georgia's ethnic minorities. Gamsakhurdia was ousted already in January 1992, but the damage had definitely very much been done by that point. By August 1992, that is to say, within a year and a half of Georgia's independence, the situation in Abkhazia had deteriorated so much that the armed conflict erupted between Abkhaz and Georgian forces. In this conflict, which lasted 16 months, atrocities were committed on both sides with resultant considerable suffering by the civilian population. In features that will be familiar to observers of the wars in the former Yugoslavia, paramilitary organizations played an important role, and the displacement of the opposing group's population, the opposing group's civilian population, was a goal rather than a byproduct of the conflict. In other words, the aim, as some servers and experts on ethnic conflict have used this term, the aim was to create facts on the ground by displacing the members of an opposing group's ethnic population and creating or eliminating minorities and majorities on the territory of a contested area. By 1993, international organizations and human rights organizations estimated that 200,000 persons had been displaced by the conflict in Abkhazia. Russian volunteers and military and financial assistance from Russia played an important role in this conflict. However, it should be noted that it is inaccurate and quite an exaggeration to depict Russia as Georgia does officially, and some observers in the West have done more recently during the August 2008 crisis, as an exclusively malignant factor. In this respect, it's worthwhile for those interested in the conflict to read or reread the reports of, for example, Human Rights Watch from the early 1990s. There we see a quite nuanced Russian role, which, however, evolves over time to be a role that is more overtly subjective and in favor of the separation of South Ossetia and, of course, also Abkhazia from the territorial or political control of Georgia. After the end of armed hostilities in December 1993, a UN observer mission was sent to the area. This force was supplemented in 1994 by a Russian-led mission, which was, in theory, controlled by the powerless Commonwealth of Independent States. This kind of peacekeeping mission led by Russia, in these peacekeeping missions led by Russia, the flag or logo of the Commonwealth of Independent States is perceived by Georgians to be a fig leaf for what is, in fact, from their perspective, a Russian occupation force rather than a Russian peacekeeping force. However, it should be said, Russia's role as a peacekeeper, along with other countries, but again with Russian troops playing numerically and politically and militarily the dominant role, was internationally accepted. The post-conflict status quo in Abkhazia after 1993-1994 was effectively frozen in place for the following years, all the way up until 2008. Abkhazia was not recognized by any state in the world, including Russia, and it existed in a gray zone similar to that of South Ossetia and Transnistria, the enclave, self-proclaimed enclave, situated between Moldavia and, or some call it Moldova, and Ukraine. Abkhazia was nearly completely dependent on assistance from Russia to survive, and it was under considerable sanctions. In 2003, an important development occurred when a popular wave of political discontent manifested itself in mass demonstrations in the streets of Tbilisi, the Georgian capital, and culminated in the ouster of Georgian President Eduard Shevardnadze. Shevardnadze had become, both from the Georgian opposition's point of view and from the point of view of Western observers, Shevardnadze had become autocratic and intolerant, and Georgia was stagnating. In fact, I want to just make a brief comment at this point that for anyone who surveys the literature on Georgia since its independence, it's quite astonishing and quite indicative how many scholars have chosen to describe the 1990s or even the period, again, from 1991, from Georgian independence until the mid-2000s, that is the middle point of this decade, how many scholars have chosen to describe that period as a failed transition, or using terms synonymous with the term failed transition. In 2003, Georgian President Eduard Shevardnadze is ousted, and he is replaced by Mikhail Saakashvili, who remains the president of Georgia to this day. starting in 2004, Saakashvili moved rapidly to reorient Georgian domestic and foreign policy in what is popularly referred to as the Euro-Atlantic direction. That is, internally, Saakashvili moved to democratize the Georgian state. He moved to against corruption. He also moved to modernize the civil service apparatus. In the foreign policy sector, this Euro-Atlantic direction meant that Saakashvili was orienting overtly Georgian foreign policy towards NATO and the European Union. Georgia's new pro-NATO policy and its stated intent to seek membership in NATO was a direct provocation to Moscow, which was already angry and perceived itself to be threatened by the eastward expansion of NATO that had taken place since 1991. Russia reacted by becoming more overt in its support for the breakaway leadership of Abkhazia. This included more direct and generous, more generous military and economic assistance. Perhaps most controversially, it also included the large-scale granting of Russian citizenship to the population of Abkhazia. This tactic allowed Russia to subsequently claim that any attacks on Abkhazia would incur Russian citizens as casualties. Now, we then have a process set in place where Russia, on the one hand, is increasingly upset about Georgia's new pro-NATO policy. On the other hand, Saakashvili, as a part of these reforms, which I addressed a moment ago, was also seeking to assert or reassert Georgian control, the Georgian state's central control over the two regions that had broken away from Georgia in the 1990s, that is Abkhazia and South Ossetia. This process of or combination of increased Russian assistance to South Ossetia and Abkhazia on the one hand and increased and increasingly assertive Georgian attempts to reincorporate South Ossetia and Abkhazia into Georgia set in motion a process which one can say culminated in August 2008 with the war between South Ossetia, Georgia, and Russia. Generally speaking, until 2008, no state wanted to recognize Abkhazia as an independent state. This included Russia, which consistently supported the principle of the territorial integrity of Georgia in documents and in international forums, such as the UN Security Council, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and other multilateral organizations. So Russia consistently, on paper, supported the principle of Georgian territorial integrity. Yet both the U.S. and the EU strongly insisted upon the territorial integrity of Georgia and continue to do so until the present day. So, on paper, all parties supported a negotiated solution for the status of Abkhazia. On paper, all parties supported Georgian territorial integrity. However, as I noted in my response to the previous question, the Russian presence and role in Abkhazia had in the past 5 years become increasingly obstructionist. It seemed that the Russians wanted to keep Abkhazia in a state of flux or purgatory, which could be used as a bargaining chip in international negotiations on other issues such as Kosovo, the international missile shield proposed by the United States, etc. Russia was concretely prolonging this situation and, again, exacerbating it by being quite generous and, since 2004, more and more overt and direct in lending military and economic assistance to the Abkhaz leadership and to the Abkhaz armed forces. In February 2008, the state of Kosovo was recognized internationally. This was done primarily by the EU and the US. Kosovo has to this day still not been recognized by the UN. Russia very strongly opposes the recognition of Kosovo and has supported Serbia in its stance to keep Kosovo as part of the Serbian state. This recognition of Kosovo by the West created a very angry reaction in Moscow. It was, seen from the Russian perspective, the umpteenth time that the West had, in the last 10 to 15 years, humiliated Russia by deciding to not appropriately consider and respect Russian foreign policy interests. And at the time, the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, admonished the West and basically made it clear that South Ossetia and Abkhazia were two other regions in the world where the recognition of Kosovo might create a precedent for the breakaway, the secession, or recognition of independence of other states. Seen from the Russian perspective, in other words, they saw the recognition of Kosovo as creating a domino effect for breakaway regions in the world. More specifically, the recognition of Kosovo and then the armed conflict, which erupted in August 2008, created a very favorable constellation in which Russia could finally recognize South Ossetia and Abkhazia as independent states. It is important to note that the armed conflict in South Ossetia in August 2008, whoever lit the match, so to speak, created certainly a Georgian attempt to forcibly reincorporate South Ossetia into the Georgian state. This, as we saw, provoked a very strong Russian military counter-reaction, in which the Georgian military was very quickly expelled from all of South Ossetia and, in fact, forced back with significant and disproportional Russian military incursions into Russian territory outside of South Ossetia or Abkhazia. And again, in this favorable, from the Russian perspective, favorable constellation to which I referred a moment earlier, this created very much the situation in which South Ossetia and Abkhazia could be recognized.